This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have with us two guests from different political perspectives to discuss the top issues in the news this week. From Governor Walker saying he's considering a wide range of tax overhauls for the next state budget, including possibly eliminating the income tax, to President Obama signing the bipartisan budget deal yesterday. And we'll discuss whatever you want to talk about, something that was an issue in the news this week, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Matt Rothschild, senior editor of the Progressive Magazine. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. And we have with us Michelle Litchens, former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Joy. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. This is our last week in review for the year. We will ask you later in the hour to talk about what you think was the most significant news story of the year, especially perhaps a news story that's going to continue to have repercussions in the year to come. But let's start off with things that did happen this week, and including President Obama yesterday signing the bipartisan budget deal. He signed it in Hawaii while on vacation. This deal reduces across-the-board cuts already scheduled to take effect, restoring about $63 billion over 2 years. It includes an $85 billion in other savings. It's not the grand bargain that the president and congressional Republicans had once wanted, but it ends the cycle of threatened government shutdowns, the fiscal brinkmanship for now, preventing another government shutdown for nearly 2 years. The bill signing marks one of President Obama's last official acts of the year. So, Matt, was this budget deal a good deal?
Well, it's a terrible deal for poor people who've been unemployed for more than 6 months because they're not going to get an extension on their unemployment benefits, and they're really hurting right now. And so it's a callous and cruel budget to that extent. It also giving people on long-term unemployment a little more insurance is good for the economy because, of course, they've got no money, so they spend the money right away. So on that level, on the most basic moral level, it was not a great deal. Fortunately, there wasn't a grand bargain, though, because I hate the idea of a grand bargain, the so-called grand bargain, because it means that President Obama would agree to Republican assaults on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and that's the last thing we need to be slashing the social safety net here. Mm-hmm. I do think the sequester that precipitated all this was a crazy idea, both on the president's part and on the Republicans' part.
So, Michelle, did you think this federal deal was a good deal or not?
Well, it's interesting. I think this is a bad deal because this continues to put this debt burden on our children's shoulders for many years in the future because we're really not addressing the major spending problems that our country has right now and balancing our budget. But I think it's good in the sense that we are averting a major government shutdown again, and that we both sides were able to come to the table. And I think the Republicans did the responsible thing by saying that now we're taking the pressure off of our shoulders for that government shutdown, and we're actually going to be discussing the major issues, which is the chaos surrounding Obamacare, and we're going to keep that in the forefront next year.
Yeah. What about the end of unemployment benefits for the long-term jobless, Michelle?
The unemployment extension started when the recession, really began a few years ago. And now we see unemployment in Wisconsin at least down below 7%, which is good for Wisconsinites. And I know that unemployment starts out saying, yes, we want to make sure that you're able to find a job in your current field. But after many weeks of that, I mean, we continue to see jobs available in the state of Wisconsin, but they might not be in the field that you'd like to find a job in. And I understand that might not be comfortable and easy, but we don't have, English teacher jobs available in Wisconsin, but let me tell you, in the Fox Valley, we have a number of manufacturing jobs that are available, and I think it's unfortunate and it's challenging, but people will need to get retrained for the jobs that we do have available today in our state.
Matt?
Oh, I just don't think there are enough jobs out there for the people who are seeking jobs. So to say that there are plenty of jobs there for anyone who wants them, I think is a distortion. And it's just, it's kind of built in structural unemployment here that's extremely high, and it's way too high. As Ben Bernanke said at his last press conference on his way out the door from the Federal Reserve Board, he said, we could have had a much stronger recovery, much less unemployment if Congress, and meaning the Republicans, hadn't gotten in the way of more stimulus. And that's really the tragedy of the last few years. We've had this unnecessarily high unemployment that's affected millions and millions of Americans and their families.
Well, veterans groups are vowing to fight cuts in this budget deal to military pensions. Michelle, was that a mistake to cut the pensions of military personnel?
Well, that really doesn't kick in until 2015. So if you read what Paul Ryan said, that we're making a start. It's unfortunate, again, but we have to deal with the dollars that we have. And if we want to make sure that our military is fully funded, we are going to have to address military pensions in the future. So this change would not take place until 2015, but they had a commission put together to address pay and pensions of the military and the reforms that are going to need to take place. Those reports are going to come in the beginning of next year. So hopefully they can find that maybe this is the right thing to do, or if they look at the commission reports, maybe they can find some additional ways to save money for and keep the money in the military so we can make sure that our soldiers are fully funded on the ground, because I think that's the most important.
Your thoughts on the military pension cuts, Matt?
I thought it's the wrong thing to do, to cut the pensions for people who've been risking their lives for this country. And I think it's unnecessary, and I think it's a real slap in the face to people who sacrificed or risk sacrificing everything.
Go ahead, Michelle.
We're not cutting their pensions. We're cutting their rate of growth in their pensions. And again, I am a strong supporter of the military. We need to take care of those folks that put their lives on the line for us. But we don't have a bottomless piggy bank. And I think we need to make sure that we spend our money responsibly. And that's what that commission was addressed to do. So hopefully they're going to come back with some good suggestions on how we can make sure to take care of those people who put their lives on the line for our country. We can also make sure that our military is fully funded.
Also this week, the deadline to sign up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act, the healthcare.gov, passed. Lots of people did manage on the last day to sign up. Matt, are the problems of healthcare.gov behind us?
Well, I hope most of them are. I wouldn't be confident to say every little glitch in the computer system is cured. It was such a self-inflicted wound by the Obama administration. I don't blame the president. I do blame his chief of staff. I do blame Kathleen Sebelius of Health and Human Services. I mean, they knew this deadline was coming long down the track, and they didn't get it working, and the software glitches were just absurd. I was signing my son up for Obamacare, they ask, where was your mother born? And if you said, you know, Chicago, comma, Illinois, and you had the comma in there, it would freeze the screen. You had to take the comma out. But if you didn't figure out you had to take the comma out, then you couldn't proceed. And it was just little stupid things like that that were driving me, my son, and also the person who was hired by the health insurance company to get us going. It was just driving us all crazy.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
You know, what's interesting with all of this, especially this last extension, CNN had reported that someone from Aetna said, we didn't even know that there was another extension out there. And I think this administration has continued to show their disregard and disrespect for how the private sector works. They think they can just throw out these rules and that the insurance companies are just going to follow along. And that's not how business operates. So it's sad to watch this continue to happen. I think we are going to continue to see the debacle of Obamacare happen all throughout next year. You know, when people start filing their taxes and realize that the president has reduced the amount of money you can spend in your flex account every year, they increased your deductions through Obamacare. It used to be that if you spent 7.5% of your income, you could deduct your health care expenses. Now it's 10% of your income that you need to spend in order to deduct those expenses on your income taxes. It's requiring people to spend more money on health care. I think we're just going to continue to see the negative effects of Obamacare throughout the next year.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was misstating the story. Monday's deadline for signing up for insurance under the new health care law has effectively been extended through Tuesday because of heavy demand on.
Joy, if I could just pick up on that a second. I mean, the thing that kills me about the Affordable Care Act, which I prefer to call it as opposed to Obamacare, because it really is not about the president, but about giving people a decent health care. The best part of about it, and Republicans had no answer for this, is are you going to cover people with pre-existing conditions? Are you going to be able to get kicked off your health insurance if you reach a ceiling? And those things about the Affordable Care Act are great. And I think the more people who sign up and realize that they finally have a health insurance when they couldn't get it before are going to be real happy. Michelle talks about the president's so-called disregard for the private sector. In actual fact, it was his regard for the private sector that was the part of the problem here in the Affordable Care Act. Because if he had simply said, if you want to keep your private health insurance, you can. But if you want to sign up for Medicare, you can do that. Then actually his promise would have been good. And also Medicare works really well. Just ask an elderly person on Medicare and then more people could have signed up for the government health care program. And we wouldn't have had this terrible PR disaster. And so, you know, what he did instead was he told the private insurance companies you can get as many as 30 million more customers. You're going to be happy.
Some Wisconsin business owners say that companies are putting off decisions to hire or expand because they're not sure how the new health care law will play out. A report says some companies worry that their health care costs will rise. Others are afraid that the law will keep changing. How is the new health care law going to play out next year, do you think, Michelle?
Again, showing a disregard for private industry. Unlike the federal government, when you run a business, you can't run a deficit every year. You need to know what your upcoming expenses are going to be when you put together your budget. So when you give private businesses uncertainty, they stand there in, like a deer in headlights, and they don't know what they're going to do. They don't want to take those risks. They don't want to expand. They don't want to hire because they don't know what their anticipated expenses are going to be. So I think we're going to see a backlash with employers hiring people because they just don't know what they're going to anticipate with their healthcare expenses next year. And we've seen that with businesses commenting on that locally. We've seen GE lay off people because of this medical device tax that's coming up down in the Milwaukee area. So, I mean, I just think when you give businesses uncertainty, they don't know what to do. And unfortunately, in this economy, we need businesses saying, yes, you know, I want to expand. I want to hire more people. And I don't think we're going to see that happen like we should be with our recovering economy because they don't know what their health care expenses are going to be next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the reasons they don't know what their health care expenses are going to be is because the private insurance companies don't have a ceiling on raising their prices, and they can jack their prices through the roof, which is another problem with the Affordable Care Act. They did have in the original proposal by President Obama a ceiling on rate increases. And, you know, I run a small business at the Progressive, and we're getting jacked up by the private insurance companies, too. So it's not like, you know, the private industry here is just has absolutely clean hands and nothing to do with the problem with increasing insurance rates.
Matt Rothschild is senior editor of the Progressive Magazine. Michelle Litchens is a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner. They are our two guests for this week's Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 if an issue in the news occurred this week that you would like them to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I think coming up next we'll talk about Governor Walker's plans to overhaul Wisconsin's tax system. Did an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week, the governor did, talking about how there's at least going to be a study as to whether we can eliminate the income tax in Wisconsin. What do you think of that idea? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking in this last Week in Review for the year with Matt Rothschild and Michelle Litchens. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, I promised to move on to state tax issues, but we have a couple of callers who want to talk about the Affordable Care Act, and Robert in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Robert.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, actually, the question is to Michelle. I was wondering what data she had in terms of the concern that small businesses, individuals who are entrepreneurs and independent contractors and freelancers are unwilling to expand their businesses because they are facing the uncertainty of health insurance. I wonder what data she has. I'm just curious about that because I'm in another related business and don't see that. So, Michelle.
Well, Robert, I was mentioning that there was a report from Gannett Newspapers that said that small businesses were worried about this, and that's what they were saying. So, Michelle, do you know of further evidence than that?
Not only just the ones that we read in the article, but again, when you talk to business owners, it's a concern that they have, especially when you reach over 50 employees. They just want to know what their expenses are next year. And I think all of health insurance is kind of in a flux right now. You know, you were told you can keep your plan, but you can't really keep your plan. And then insurance companies were told, well, yeah, you can reinstate those plans, but yet they've already gotten rid of those plans. And I think that the whole industry right now is in flux. And again, when you're talking to an employer who has expenses coming up next year and they don't know exactly what those are going to be, it puts them in a state of confusion. And again, they don't know what their expenses are going to be.
So, Robert, you're not in flux. You're not concerned in your business?
No, but I would point out there are a couple of things that mitigate against what Michelle's saying. One is she commented on the 50 employees. That's actually a pretty large business. So under 50, there are no penalties this year, and you still have, as a small business person, independent contractor, entrepreneur, freelancer, that kind of business, you now have no pre-existing conditions. You have no maximum out-of-pocket, or you have a maximum out-of-pocket cap. You have expenditures that are predictable compared to most of the either going uninsured or previous insurance. So I think you have to look at both sides. I just want to present businesses with both sides of the story. Not that there's one side. There are both sides of the story. And that's it. I'll take my other answers off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Do you have anything to add to that, Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, he again was talking about things that he liked about the Affordable Care Act, which I understand everybody's got a differing opinion about that. But again, if you're a business and you're looking at providing health insurance to your employees or deciding if you want to stop providing that and just give them, you know, a subsidy so they can go on to the exchange and purchase it, which we've seen thousands of, or it happened to thousands and thousands of employees across the country where employers have decided that they don't want that additional risk and they're just going to give their employees a set amount of dollars and, you know, set them out on the individual exchanges to purchase their own health insurance. So, I mean, I think we've seen evidence of that happening with Obamacare all across the country because mm-hmm. the businesses don't want to retain that uncertainty.
Matt?
Robert has a point in that a lot of small business owners themselves can now get health insurance, whereas they couldn't get it before for various reasons, including pre-existing conditions. And some of their employees who were never getting it before can now get it. These are employers with less than 50 employees. But if you look at the big picture, it's just an oddity that the United States has latched health insurance onto the private sector. And there is a much more rational and sensible way, and that is for the government to pay for everybody's health insurance because health insurance and health care is a human right.
Let's take another call from Royce in Madison. Hello, Royce.
Hello. Good morning. The reason I called in, there was an excellent article on the health care, what's going on in Wisconsin that was done by the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism and also MinnPost, which is the equivalent of Minnesota. And the big thing that I took back from this article is Wisconsin is pushing 77,000 off Medicaid. And in Minnesota, of course, they took expanded Medicaid, and no one is going off the Medicaid rolls. In fact, they're adding adults. But this is also, they have other things going on that was in the article, and that is that the insurance rates in Wisconsin are higher than they are in Minnesota. And the fact that everyone's rates are expected to go up by 10% in Wisconsin because we didn't take the expanded Medicaid.
All right, thank you, Royce. Matt, what do you think of that?
Well, I do think it was outrageous that Governor Walker rejected the federal money. He just doesn't seem to want any money that's coming from Washington, and then he complains about the budget. He didn't take federal money to expand Medicaid, and just is callously throwing 77,000 poor people just out in the cold here for the next few months. And I don't see how you can justify that in any moral way.
Yeah. So what about, Michelle, was this a mistake? Now Wisconsin's doing worse than Minnesota because of this, Royce says.
Not at all. This is what Wisconsin voted for Obama. They supported Obamacare, and this is exactly what Obamacare is supposed to do, right? Provide this health insurance through the exchanges so that you can receive insurance through the exchange and then receive the subsidy for it. So those folks that are over 100% of poverty. So Wisconsin is going to continue to provide insurance through Medicaid to those individuals that are 100% of the poverty level. But over that, you are going to now, 3 months from now, you know, qualify to participate through the exchanges just like Obamacare wants you to do. I think Wisconsin had great insurance before. We had 95% of the citizens in Wisconsin covered with insurance. We had the HRSA program for individuals who had pre-existing conditions and couldn't find insurance through the private market on their own previously. You know, if we wanted to just discuss the pre-existing conditions issue and the ceiling of what you could spend on the health insurance in your lifetime issue, you know, we could address that. But instead, they completely overhauled private insurance in this country. For those of us who liked our health insurance plans, we liked the premiums that we have, we can't choose that anymore. So I would really like to see us go back to the drawing table. We have great examples and great plans in Congress right now where we could just fix the problems at hand instead of completely overhauling the entire system. But, I mean, if you wanted to go to a single-payer system, obviously you wouldn't agree with anything that I said. But for those of us who did like our insurance and we'd like to go back to having a privately run insurance system, that's the direction I'd like to see us go.
Well, Matt, is that what do you want to see happen with the Affordable Care Act and health insurance in 2014?
Well, I'm worried about the blowback against the Affordable Care Act, because if it gets too intense, and it's really hurting Democrats right now, that's the least of it. If it gets too intense, I worry it will be repealed. And if it's repealed, then we are left with status quo ante, where people don't get health insurance if they've got pre-existing conditions, or the insurance companies can throw you off if you've reached a maximum amount of expenditures. And those those kinds of moral failings don't exist in any other advanced industrial country, where you can just say to someone who's got cancer, I'm not going to cover you because you've got cancer, or your kid has got cancer or some terrible disease. I mean, that's not a society we should want to live in. You know, the president of the United States has discredited progressivism without enacting progressivism, and the Affordable Care Act is a prime example of that. If he had sought Medicare for all, or at least a decent public option, and let people sign up that way versus, as Michelle wants, go back to their private insurance policy as if those were great. But if you want them, fine. That would have been one thing. But instead, he played the public option, and people advocating for the public option or single payer just for chumps, and said, well, I'm not as far out as those people, so let's just keep our private insurance system intact. And that's what concerns me overall. It concerns me that he is discrediting the possibility that government can actually do things that help people. And that's the PR disaster that has been the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. I don't think it's true. Anyone who's got a parent or a grandparent on Medicare or Medicaid knows that's not true. But certainly he's been just fueling the right-wing propaganda machine.
Well, you know, you mentioned the midterms. Democrats have lost their advantage, and Republicans now have a slight edge in the battle for control of Congress, according to a new national poll from CNN. Looks like, you know, the president's numbers and the Affordable Care Act numbers are dragging down Democrats. What do you think about that, Michelle?
I think we are going to continue to see, as long as the topic continues to be focused on the failure of Obamacare and our government spending more money than we have, if that's what we can keep the topic on, or the national topic on, I think you're going to continue to see Republican numbers increase. People want, many people who have health insurance want to keep the insurance that they currently have. They do want to make sure that individuals that couldn't obtain insurance in the past or were kicked off their insurance if they have access to that. So we want to see that happen, but we don't need to completely overhaul the system. And when you are affected, when you receive that letter in the mail saying your insurance plan now has been canceled, one that you've chosen and you know you're paying for on your own, or your employers are telling you that they're taking away your insurance and they're going to send you out on the exchanges to fend for yourself, and you might not have your own doctor that you liked. And when people receive those kinds of letters and information, they're not happy about it. And I think you're going to continue to see Republican numbers increase over the next year, as long as that's what we can keep the topic on.
Yeah, 2 months ago, Democrats held a 50% to 42% advantage over Republicans. A month ago, that lead shrank 49% to 47%. Now, this new survey, which was conducted in mid-December, shows Republicans with a 49 to 44% edge over the Democrats, Matt.
Well, it's a huge turnaround. Remember, right before that, there was the government shutdown, which is a debacle for the Republican Party. As even Majority Leader Boehner said, it was ridiculous that the Tea Party people were keeping the government shutdown and holding the Republican Party hostage, the whole country hostage for that matter. It was refreshing to see the speaker call out the Tea Party people finally. But look, this Affordable Care Act is going to be in the news because Fox News and right-wing radio is going to be talking about it interminably now. You know, it's a chew toy for the Republicans, the Affordable Care Act is, and they won't go of it.
We have a caller who can change the subject for us. David in Oshkosh is here. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yes, what is your comment?
Well, I would like to talk about the massive NSA oversight that's going on right now and what we can do on a state level to ensure that we aren't supporting this, or for lack of a better word, that's being tossed around everywhere now, Orwellian state of what's become something like the Nullify NSA campaign, which says that the massive computers that store all this information require 1.7 million gallons of water every day to keep running, where if the state doesn't provide that water to them, they don't function anymore.
Thanks, David. It was in the news this week that National Security Agency, some call him leaker, some call him whistleblower, Edward Snowden says his mission's already accomplished after leaking NSA secrets that have caused a reassessment of U.S. surveillance policies. He told the Washington Post in a story that was published online that he has already won because journalists have been able to tell the story of the government's collection of bulk internet and phone records. President Obama hinted last week, Friday, that he would consider some changes to the NSA's collection of Americans' phone records to address these concerns. Matt, what do you think needs to happen with the NSA?
Well, I appreciated David's call, and I think people locally at the city council level or at the county level can try to pass resolutions condemning what the NSA has been doing, kind of like what happened during the nuclear freeze, and not participating to the extent possible with this kind of invasion of our Fourth Amendment rights. This certainly was one of the biggest stories of the year. This Snowden story, and I think Glenn Greenwald, who broke it, should get a Pulitzer Prize for it. And Edward Snowden is a whistleblower and kind of a patriot, too, and he was brave to come out publicly saying, yeah, I'm the guy who leaked it, instead of just running anonymously with his charges. It's kind of embarrassing for the Obama administration because I think the president has said it's a conversation we needed to have. Well, we wouldn't have been having this conversation if it weren't for Edward Snowden. And here's a time, Joy, where I agree with James Sensenbrenner. I don't get to say that very often because he said that the director of national intelligence, Mr. Clapper, should be indicted. Because Clapper, when he was testifying before Congress, said they weren't collecting mass data on Americans who weren't under suspicion. And then later, Clapper admitted it was the least untruthful thing I could say. He's virtually acknowledging that he did something really, really wrong. So, you know, Rand Paul and James Sensenbrenner have been calling for the firing, if not the prosecution, of Clapper. And I agree with them.
Michelle?
Oh, I completely agree as well, actually, and it was just such a disappointment to see our government run amok as they usually do. When you give them an inch, they'll take a mile unless they have restraints put on them when it comes to anyway, seeking out information, especially on our citizens. So I was so happy to see Sensenbrenner try to make those changes to the Patriot Act so our government can't do that again. I'm quite honestly, I'm surprised that Edward Snowden is still talking to the press. But it's good that, in the sense that he made us aware that our government was doing this. It's so sad that our own government was doing that to its own citizens, but we need to make sure that our privacy is protected again in the future. So hopefully members of Congress can do the right thing there, and they can work together in a bipartisan way to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Well, before we move on to Wisconsin's plans to look at the tax system, as I promised a long time ago, since Matt just mentioned that the NSA spying story and the Snowden whistleblowing of that story was one of the biggest stories of the year, Michelle, what do you think was the biggest story of the year?
To me, it's more of a bit of that time frame when the Republicans started the filibuster and they shut down the government and the Republican numbers went down so much. And then, then they launched Obamacare or the website on October 1st, and everything shifted, and it shifted rather quickly, and the conversation shifted. And I don't think that conversation is going to shift back, actually, until not only is Obamacare fixed, but as far as I'm concerned, it's repealed, so that folks can have the insurance that they enjoyed back in place. So when the Obamacare website was launched, and the fact that our federal government didn't test that over and over and over and over again and look for every bug, just like every other business does, because before they launched their website, I'm still surprised at that. I'm very surprised that our federal government decided to launch a program when it was not perfected, and there were so many questions yet unanswered on both sides, from the insurance companies and the folks that were actually trying to get this insurance. So, and that is a story that we are going to hear about all of next year.
Matt?
Yeah, I just want to throw out something totally different as far as the biggest news of the year, and I hate to be following Time Magazine, but I do love Pope Francis, and I think he has just been a breath of fresh air for hundreds of millions of Catholics, because he's less doctrinaire. He's not insisting constantly that every sentence coming out of the Vatican or coming out of any parish priest's mouth has to be about abortion and gay rights. He said actually nice things about gays, saying, "Who am I to judge?" He said nice things about atheists and Marxists, for God's sakes. And even more fundamentally, he went after the unregulated free market, saying that it violates thou shalt not kill. And I think there's more to come from Pope Francis in the next year, and this is a huge 180 for the Catholic Church.
Do you want to weigh in on that, Michelle?
Oh, I love Pope Francis. And he is showing us in by his own actions that we do not look to government to take care of people, that it is our personal responsibility to go out there and feed the poor. It is our first personal responsibility to take care of those individuals who need to be cared for. And he is challenging us to do that on a personal level. And I just think that is beautiful. And I do also agree that we are going to hear a lot from Pope Francis next year.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Michelle Litchens, a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh, and Matt Rothschild, senior editor of The Progressive magazine. Coming up, I promise we will talk about the talk of eliminating possibly the income tax in Wisconsin. And we have the Week in Review quiz and more here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Wisconsin birders, that's right, birders, have been in for a real treat over the past few weeks as sightings of a particular kind of bird have been reported. The Christmas Day bird counts are coming in, and as of Christmas Day, the DNR says about 147 of these birds have been spotted around the state. We don't see them in those numbers every year. What kind of bird are we talking about? 1-800-642-1234. Call in with your answer. We'll give you 5 minutes. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we'll reveal the winner and the answer at the end of the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Matt Rothschild and Michelle Litchens during this edition of the Week in Review. And we will move on to some state issues, including the talk about reforming or overhauling the tax system in Wisconsin. There's some mixed reaction to the idea of possibly eliminating the income tax in Wisconsin. Michelle Litchens, what do you think of this idea? Is that a good idea to eliminate the income tax?
I don't think we're going to see that eliminated anytime soon, but when you see Wisconsin consistently in the top 10 taxed states in the country, I think it's something we need to talk about. It's interesting, over Christmas, I had family members that got together, and two recently moved here from Indianapolis. Now, they moved here specifically to be closer to family, but one mentioned his property taxes are substantially higher, and his income taxes are substantially higher. He said it costs a lot to join the Wisconsin Club to move back. So we don't have the natural resources here in our state. We don't have a huge tourism industry to bring people to the state like other states do. I think we need to be very conscious of trying to attract people and retain people so that they don't move to other states when they're retired in their, you know, prime spending years. So we keep people here in our state, and I think we need to address our income taxes and our property taxes for that reason. But I do not think that anything is going to change dramatically anytime soon. I think we have to give Governor Walker credit for addressing the issue and hopefully putting together a plan that might take place over the next 5 or 10 years on how we can start reducing some spending and using our growth to reduce the tax burden on Wisconsinites.
To be clear, in an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week, Governor Walker opened the door to a host of potential tax overhauls in his February 2015 budget. So he's preparing for the 2015 budget, from eliminating or flattening the income tax to dropping technical colleges from local property tax rolls, among other things, not promising anything big on tax cuts or reforms, but at least looking into it. So, Matt, what do you think?
Well, getting rid of the income tax is a terrible idea. It's an incredibly regressive idea. Our income tax is already pretty flat, actually, and a progressive income tax was championed by Fighting Bob La Follette and by people who understand that those at the top have a little bit more ability to pay than those at the bottom. It just seems to make perfect moral sense. Now, look what would happen under Walker's proposal to get rid of the sales tax. For people in the middle class, around $50,000 a year, you'd be paying actually about $750 more with the sales tax, whereas the top 1% in Wisconsin, they'd get a $44,000 tax break. This is class warfare, Republican style.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that he wants lawmakers to consider more modest tax cuts as soon as this spring, talking about maybe a sales tax holiday. What about that, Michelle?
I think a sales tax holiday is wonderful, especially for those of us who are out shopping and spending substantial dollars, you know, in August preparing to go back to school. I think that would help working families in the state of Wisconsin. Any time that you can reduce taxes on individuals, we have more dollars to spend out, you know, to grow other businesses. So I think that that's a fantastic idea, and I wholeheartedly support it. If it's something that's going to work, I mean, again, in Wisconsin, we do have to make sure we have a balanced budget. So as long as we can guarantee that we have some increased revenue coming in from growth, and we can find ways to reduce spending in other areas, then I think any way that we can reduce taxes in the state is great for our citizens.
Yeah, Robin Voss also said that we will have to wait for these revenue numbers in January before doing anything when it comes to any kind of major overhaul. But he seems to be lukewarm to the idea of eliminating the income tax, Matt. What do you think is going to happen with this?
Oh, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's interesting that his proposal is absolutely the opposite of what Governor Walker's was. Governor Walker wanted to increase the sales tax. Voss wants a sales tax holiday, which I've got no problem with. Increasing the sales tax for retailers, for small business, would be terrible because every one of their products would cost more, so people would buy less of their products. So it doesn't make sense from a macroeconomic standpoint either.
1-800-642-1234 is our number. If you want to bring up an issue during this edition of The Week in Review, you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking with Michelle Litchens and Matt Rothschild, we have a caller who wants to weigh in on what he thinks is the biggest news story of the year, and it's not a long list, Willem. What's your top issue of the year?
Well, the proposed changes to the way that, towns and local municipalities control their, like, water discharge, their air quality, their road use, attempts to eliminate that power from these local authorities. And really the only reason to do that is to benefit in the part of the state where I live is the sand mining industry and the iron mining industry, because they won't take it, some of these businesses put 1,000 trucks a day on the road, and you would have to prove that they are doing damage to the road, like with criminal intent.
I'm lost, Willem. What is this? What is the new regulation or new law that you think is the biggest news story of the year?
That's it. The attempt to take away local control.
And why is that important?
Because it eliminates the ability for local towns and municipalities to control their water discharge regulations, their road use regulations. They would not have the ability to charge. It's a way for the state to.
I'm sorry, Willem. I just wanted to make sure listeners could understand. You're concerned about this because of the proposed iron mine and frac sand mining. What do you think of this, Matt, first?
Well, I think Willem's on to something big there. I mean, Republicans who talk a lot about local control all the time all of a sudden are taking local control away from cities and counties, including some in northern Wisconsin who are trying to regulate frac sand mining. And the iron mining, the GTEC mine up north in Iron County, is one of the big stories of the year in the protests there. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that in the next year, too. I mean, let's face it, the out-of-state mining company wrote the mining bill that the Republicans rammed through the legislature and Walker was pleased to sign.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
I think there's always a delicate balance between making sure that the local governments and local citizens are happy, but that yet you're serving the entire state at the same time. So I'm not exactly specifically familiar with what he's talking about, but as far as talking about the mine and making the changes up there, I mean, I just think that is going to be fabulous, responsible growth for the state of Wisconsin. I'm from the home building industry in the Fox Valley, and there are just countless individuals I can name that have moved out to the Bakken's area out in South Dakota who are doing contracting out there because the growth out there is, it's really unbelievable. The jobs that are available and the folks that are earning that healthy income, either driving trucks or as contractors or working in the oil fields. They're paying $18 an hour to work at Taco Bell out there. There's a sign that says, ask about our 401k plan, just because they need employees to work in fast food restaurants because everyone's going to the oil fields. And I know we can see something of that size happening in northern Wisconsin while we're protecting our waterways, we're protecting our environment in that area, but we can also use those natural resources and create some jobs in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm very excited about seeing that mine happen.
The Democratic Party is making a new push for raising the number of female governors in this country. Democratic leaders backed by national women's groups are working to shift the imbalance in gubernatorial elections next fall that feature no less than 6 high-profile Democratic women. Of course, Wisconsin would be one of those states with at least one declared a Democratic candidate, Mary Burke, and perhaps another with State Senator Kathleen Vinehout vying for a Democratic nomination to challenge Governor Walker. Matt, what do you think of this Democratic Party push to increase the number of female governors?
It's a long time in coming. It's been a long time in coming for Wisconsin to have its first female governor. And, I had hoped a while ago that Barbara Lawton might be that person, but she stepped out of that race. Unfortunately, to my mind, was pushed out by the Democratic strategists, such as they are in the Obama administration. And that was too bad because I think she had more to give to the state of Wisconsin. It was a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, is it time we put a woman in the governor's office?
You know, it's interesting. I love female candidates. I am so proud that Republicans can claim four female governors in this great country right now. But, you know, it's interesting. The RNC did a report last year where they had said women are not a coalition. And I think that's so important to remember. You know, a female realtor will vote more with realtors than she will with, you know, women in general. So I think it's important that we can connect with women as a gender, and there are issues, but, you know, whenever they say, oh, women are all concerned about women's issues, I don't know, I kind of feel like that's knocking us down a bit by saying women are really only concerned with the fact that someone is a female that they're voting for, and then specifically women's issues, when we are the primary financial decision makers in the homes today. I think women are just concerned with so many more issues other than just, you know, voting for a woman for a position. But, I mean, I always think it's great that more women are running for public office, because it certainly brings additional challenges when women decide to run. But I'm proud that Republicans can claim four female governors right now.
Well, in our final moments here, an Associated Press story saying Governor Scott Walker dominated Wisconsin's political news for another year. And, of course, next year is an election year. A handicap for us briefly, Matt. What do you think? What do you think the governor's race is going to be like next year?
Well, I hope that there is a Democratic primary. I hope that Kathleen Vinehout gets in the race, if for no other reason than just to give voters a choice. Number one. And number two, if the ultimate Democratic candidate is Mary Burke, I think she needs to get some batting practice. And that would provide her with some good training for what's going to be a very tough fight against Scott Walker, who's going to have more money than God.
Very briefly, Michelle, your thoughts.
Scott Walker is going to have a lot of money. But I think Scott Walker also has a strong platform to run on. People know that when he says he's going to do something, he is going to do it. He is very straightforward about what he wants to do, where he wants to go, and I think people can respect that, even if you don't always agree with him. So I think next year is going to be interesting. It's, again, politics in Wisconsin. It's a very purple state. You know, we are not Republican. We are not Democrat, but we are right there in the middle. So 2014 is going to be a very interesting year.
Well, it's time to congratulate Kirk as the winner of our Week in Review quiz. The DNR says 147 of what kind of bird has been reported around Wisconsin in recent weeks? It's the snowy owl. The DNR says that while the snowy owl is flying and hooting all over the state, the numbers usually drop off quite a bit in the Southwest and near Lake Michigan, or at least this winter, not seeing as many in the Southwest or near Lake Michigan right now. 147, though, seems impressive, but that's about what we were seeing in 2011. But it's considered an eruption. You don't see usually this many snowy owls in the state. And since you can't see the snowy owl over the radio, let's take a listen to what the snowy owl sounds like. I want to see a snowy owl, and I know, Matt Rothschild, you're a birder. You want to see one, too?
Yeah, I'm going to go out tomorrow to Goose Pond, I think, in Southern Columbia County. Sometimes there's a snowy owl around there.
Yeah, I'm going to look. What about you? Are you a bird watcher, Michelle?
Oh, I love birds, and I'm expanding my bird feeders rapidly, actually. So it's just fun to watch them, and they're just so beautiful to watch, especially in the winter.
Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thanks, Joy. Yeah.
Michelle Lichen, former Republican state representative from Oshkosh, and Matt Rothschild is the senior editor of The Progressive magazine. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.